Mitchell, we're going to have to make sure we put these lies to bed.
Chapter 4. Everything matters equally. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said, "Things which matter most must never be at the mercy of things which matter least."
Equality is a worthy ideal pursued in the name of justice and human rights. In the real world of results, however, things are never equal. No matter how teachers grade, two students are not equal. No matter how fair officials try to be, contests are not equal. No matter how talented people are, no two are ever equal. A dime equals 10 cents, and people must absolutely be treated fairly. But in the world of achievement, everything doesn't matter equally. Equality is a lie. Understanding this is the basis of all great decisions. So how do you decide? When you have a lot to get done in the day, how do you decide what to do first? As kids, we mostly did things we needed to do when it was time to do them. It's breakfast time. It's time to go to school. Time to do homework. Time to do chores, bath time, bedtime. Then, as we got older, we were given a measure of discretion. You can go out and play as long as you get your homework done before dinner. Later, as we became adults, everything became discretionary. It all became our choice. And when our lives are defined by our choices, the all-important question becomes, how do we make good ones?
Bob Hawke said, "The things which are most important don't always scream the loudest."
Complicating matters, the older we get, it seems there is more and more piled on that we believe simply must get done. Overbooked, overextended, and overcommitted. In the weeds, overwhelmingly becomes our collective condition. That's when the battle for the right of way gets fierce and frantic. Lacking a clear formula for making decisions, we get reactive and fall back on familiar, comfortable ways to decide what to do. As a result, we haphazardly select approaches that undermine our success. Pinballing through our day like a confused character in a B-horror movie, we end up running up the stairs instead of out the front door. The best decision gets traded for any decision, and what should be progress simply becomes a trap. When everything feels urgent and important, everything seems equal. We become active and busy, but this doesn't actually move us any closer to success. Activity is often unrelated to productivity, and busyness rarely takes care of business. As Henry David Thoreau said, "It's not enough to be busy. So are the ants. The question is, what are we busy about?" Knocking out 100 tasks, for whatever the reason, is a poor substitute for doing even one task that's meaningful. Not everything matters equally. And success isn't a game won by whoever does the most. Yet that is exactly how most play it on a daily basis.
Much to do about nothing.
To-do lists are a staple of the time management and success industry. With our wants and others' wishes flying at us right and left, we impulsively jot them down on scraps of paper in moments of clarity, or build them methodically on printed notepads. Time planners reserve valuable space for daily, weekly, and monthly task lists. Apps abound for taking to-dos mobile, and software programs code them right into their menus. It seems that everywhere we turn, we're encouraged to make lists. And though lists are invaluable, they have a dark side. While to-dos serve as a useful collection of our best intentions, they also tyrannize us with trivial, unimportant stuff that we feel obligated to get done because it's on our list. Which is why most of us have a love-hate relationship with our to-dos. If allowed, they set our priorities the same way an inbox can dictate our day. Most inboxes overflow with unimportant emails masquerading as priorities. Tackling these tasks in the order we receive them is behaving as if the squeaky wheel immediately deserves the grease. But as Australian Prime Minister Bob Hawke duly noted, the things which are most important don't always scream the loudest. Achievers operate differently. They have an eye for the essential. They pause just long enough to decide what matters and then allow what matters to drive their day. Achievers do sooner what others plan to do later, and defer, perhaps indefinitely, what others do sooner. The difference isn't in intent, but in right of way. Achievers always work from a clear sense of priority. Left in its raw state, as a simple inventory, a to-do list can easily lead you astray. A to-do list is simply the things you think you need to do. The first thing on your list is just the first thing you thought of. To-do lists inherently lack the intent of success. In fact, most to-do lists are actually just survival lists, getting you through your day and your life, but not making each day a stepping stone for the next, so that you sequentially build a successful life. Long hours spent checking off a to-do list and ending the day with a full trash can and a clean desk are not virtuous and have nothing to do with success. Instead of a to-do list, you need a success list, a list that is purposely created around extraordinary results. To-do lists tend to be long. Success lists are short. One pulls you in all directions. The other aims you in a specific direction. One is a disorganized directory, and the other is an organized directive. If a list isn't built around success, then that's not where it takes you. If your to-do list contains everything, then it's probably taking you everywhere but where you really want to go. So how does a successful person turn a to-do list into a success list? With so many things you could do, how do you decide what matters most at any given moment on any given day? Just follow Urine's lead.
Urine cracks the code.
In the late 30s, a group of managers at General Motors made an intriguing discovery that opened the door for an amazing breakthrough. One of their card readers, an input device for early computers, started producing gibberish. While investigating the faulty machine, they stumbled on a way to encode secret messages. This was a big deal at the time. Since Germany's infamous Enigma coding machines first appeared in World War I, both code making and code breaking were the stuff of high national security, and even higher public curiosity. The GM managers quickly became convinced that their accidental cipher was unbreakable. One man, a visiting Western Electric consultant, disagreed. He took up the code-breaking challenge, worked into the night, and cracked the code by 3 o'clock the following morning. His name was Joseph M. Urine. Urine later cited this incident as the starting point for cracking an even bigger code and making one of his greatest contributions to science and business. As a result of his deciphering success, a GM executive invited him to review research on management compensation that followed a formula described by a little-known Italian economist, Vilfredo Pareto. In the 19th century, Pareto had written a mathematical model for income distribution in Italy that stated that 80% of the land was owned by 20% of the people. Wealth was not evenly distributed. In fact, according to Pareto, it was actually concentrated in a highly predictable way. A pioneer of quality control management, Urine noticed that a handful of flaws would usually produce a majority of the defects. This imbalance not only rang true to his experience, but he suspected it might even be a universal law. And what Pareto had observed might be bigger than even Pareto had imagined. While writing his seminal book named Quality Control Handbook, Urine wanted to give a short name to the concept of the vital few and trivial many. One of the many illustrations in his manuscript was labeled Pareto's Principle of Unequal Distribution. Where another might have called it Urine's Rule, he called it Pareto's Principle. Pareto's principle, it turns out, is as real as the law of gravity. And yet most people fail.